Welcome to Startup Confidential, what industry insiders will never tell you that you need to know if you're building a consumer brand, with your host, best-selling author of Ramping Your Brand, Dr. James Richardson. Let's do this.
Welcome to episode 114. The death funnel is even deadlier. A lot of entrepreneurs think that they have the next big thing, and I get it. You kind of have to believe this to push through the fire hose of no's, then the, you know, that won't work, and that's a stupid idea. Seriously, 70 to 80% of early stage brands in food and beverage never even get to 500,000 in trailing sales. As you sit back and contemplate that number, it seems awfully small, doesn't it? The reality is that most folks who don't make it to 500,000 in net sales, aside from the folks who decided that $100,000 is all they ever wanted, those folks who flame out generally make unforced errors. And the most common is not raising enough seed monies to cover the first 2 to 3 production runs and the first 120 days of operations before distributors tend to pay you. An inability to forecast your early cash burn is a close second. In fact, Gary Hirschberg, if he was here, would probably be screaming, "Cash burn!" into your ears until they bleed and you finally relent. I can't list all the many reasons why you could kill your own business in that first $500,000 of trailing sales, because it would take the rest of this episode. And it would be a very depressing list to begin with. But the most unforgivable reason is trying to grow too damn fast before you even know what you have. This was a viral brain disease during the 2010s, like nothing I've ever seen. It even inspired a data science experiment you can find in my book, Ramping Your Brand. An experiment in which my team and I, at a prior company, buried this distribution alone strategy into a muddy grave. Not that anyone listened. Luckily, folks, the foolish venture capital that funded all of this is basically gone forever. Never again will Wall Street give $1 million companies $25 billion to play with. Even the distribution alone strategy has problems in 2024. The pandemic permanently raised baseline sales of market-leading brands. This means that shelf slots are permanently reduced for new brands approaching retail buyers. I don't know how else to communicate this, but there's less space for you now to compete for. So getting on the shelf is harder than ever, especially at large chains, even at regional chains. And this means that there's a higher burden to generating early growth, you know, outside the store, based on your activities at less optimal lower foot traffic stores that most likely are the ones you can get into right away. So the desire to accelerate faster than your operations and balance sheet are ready to handle is, look, it's understandable if you spent 1 to 3 years busting your butt trying to develop your initial product. I get it. The impatience is real. But it's also dangerous if you are really quite innovative, like Siggy's was, but have no clue how to position the business properly in a foreign market. There's two basic ways you can grow a business in consumer packaged goods. You can use what's called the push strategy, which is honestly the mainstay of large publicly traded companies. Push is expensive. It requires highly mainstream offerings that basically aren't innovative at all. Like, I don't know, devour frozen meals. A large calorie portion size of ordinary American Denny's food, replete with all sorts of cheese and carbs. It requires a sales organization capable of reaching 80 to 90% ACV in the category in like 6 to 9 months. And those just are few of the requirements you can't meet. I mean, let's be real. Contrary to what many confused venture capitalists preach, even well-funded startups cannot really pull off this kind of push strategy, even with a war chest. Not the way that Frito-Lay can do almost every single year. And certainly not with a brand new trademark that nobody trusts. Not with your under-resourced organization. Now, even if you do have $10 to $20 million in investor capital for some reason, super unlikely that you will ever see that. But even if you do have it, you still don't have the resources that a large firm like Frito-Lay has with its DSD trucking fleet, its massive analytical resources, its decades of institutional experience and trust with the retail trade, and experience in launching products super fast to a mass audience.
at millions of points of distribution. But here's the stickler. 80% of the time, this mega resource push strategy from the big boys, it still doesn't work. Not because they don't hit initial revenue targets in year one, but because the sales volume doesn't last. If you're a large company, you could afford to string those launches together and you may still magically grow the EPS. There is a cynical alchemy to this big co push approach. But this entire model is unavailable to you as an entrepreneur, believing that this or that investment firm can simply fund a magical push up the ramp is incredibly naive and usually results in a subpar private equity exit. You might get rich, but you sabotage the business' long-term potential. That sounds like Wall Street. So what's the other way? The other way is to grow by pulling the product off the shelf. You're not going to pull it off. That's fraud. You're going to have consumers pull it off the shelf. The pull model is about designing and marketing something so freaking cool that it causes consumers to pull it off the shelf, tell their friends who then pull more off the shelf, etc. A pull growth strategy is a business driven by month over month, same store velocity gains. Not end cap displays, not seasonal promos and LTOs, by real growth and demand. And it's the single toughest KPI that you could ever hold your organization to.
Hey listeners, exponential growth involves more than a killer product, great fundraising, and a great team. You need superb analytics to ride the ramp. Dr. Richardson's latest online course is now available, Effective Consumer Marketing for Early Stage Founders. You can find course pricing and details at premiumgrowthsolutions.com/courses. And now, back to the episode.
In the industry and in the marketing world, we call this organic growth. Now, in the natural organic industry, this phrase organic growth is a nice little pun. Unfortunately, it has been happening largely due to sector growth, not because of outstanding marketing and design. Organic growth, this pull model, is created by more and more consumers trying a product and more of them becoming repeat purchasers, usually because they're having it on more occasions. And I tell you, strategizing and managing a business driven by organic growth, driven by pull, is the smartest thing that anybody can do with a small business using their own money, which most of you are doing. This is because it forces you to maximize repeat purchases in specific channels and geographies. It forces you to design and reach an audience who become fans. And this, in turn, becomes very financially efficient for distribution early on. Getting more and more revenue out of existing points of distribution is one of your best and very possible perfect weapons to steal market share from lazy incumbent brands. Not the market leaders, but the other guys, the B, C, D, and E share brands. So how does this all pan out if you do it well? What are the principles? Well, first, you add your accounts very slowly and strategically based on where you think the shopper base is going to be highly disposed to the innovation you're bringing to market. That also could be highly localized in regionalized assessment of the shopper base inside even a national chain. You know, target shoppers in Ohio are different than target shoppers in Southern California. After you've added stores strategically and slowly, not thousands at a time, you build a fan base as you're doing this so you can learn about your product. Now, when I hear a lot of founders speak, it's clear that they understand everything about their product as a manufactured widget ordered from the co-man because they've spent 1 to 3 years fussing over it. In fact, they're sick and tired of fussing over it and they want to make some money. That's the temptation to running out too fast. The seed money is also potentially draining away. They don't have a lot of shots to get this right now. But until you've had sustained interactions with hundreds and hundreds of consumers, including your fans, you really have no clue what you have. You just have a hypothesis that you started with about why you're going to grow organically. But is it correct? I mean, NASA doesn't send the satellite up hoping it'll work, not when a launch costs 100 mil. They test every component dozens and dozens and dozens of times in conditions similar to space. And this costs billions of dollars that you definitely don't have. So obviously you're not going to go that route. And it's cheaper to just use a pull strategy that I'm describing by building an initial fan base at small scale and learning from them in a contained geography or region. Hold that store count after getting up to a couple hundred a year or more. Measure your same store growth. Feed the brand with out-of-store sampling and in-store displays. And start measuring. Are you growing steadily at the same stores for 12 to 24 months? If you're not, you seriously need to rethink your product or the market playbook to generate the pull. And for God's sakes, don't add any more stores until you've figured all that out. Now, how long are you really going to grow in the same stores? Legitimate question. Well, this is unfortunately not a predictive science that I am aware of. Even though there's no hard and fast rule, I can tell you that you should experience multiple years, if not 5 to 10 years of velocity growth at same stores for well-designed, positioned, and marketed premium brands. Now, it may not be explosive growth in the beginning. It could just be steady, what we might call geometric growth. So you and the buyer might not see the long-term magic unfolding right away. But the key is that as you're adding stores, you don't want the incline of your velocity growth slope to be declining or flattening out, because that's a sign that your new stores are simply not adding efficiency to the business. They're performing worse and worse as you add them. And declining velocity is the real red flag when it's sustained. So add stores when you're confident in velocity growth, where you already are, and confident that the growth is actually healthy, and you know why you are growing and how your executional mix, your playbook, is helping. Then start ramping distribution. It's my belief that even in 2024, if you are a snack or beverage company where your units, your packages are emptied in 1 to 3 usage occasions, you should be able to create at least a $1 to $3 million business in a large US metro. If you can't, there's something suboptimal with your design, enough of a problem that you do not want to be going national. By the way, this velocity-based pull strategy is not only a smart system for navigating the dreaded death funnel, which still exists, it's a smart system for any stage in the revenue growth curve of an early stage company. It's just that everything I just described is massively more critical to survival in the first $500,000 in annual recurring sales. More critical than it even is for a $10 to $20 million early stage company. That's all I gotta say, folks. Get through that death funnel and study your fans. Be safe out there.
Thanks for listening. Remember, Dr. Richardson has loads of resources for founders at premiumgrowthsolutions.com. And when you're on his site, don't forget to take his founders quiz and see if you're ready to ride the skate ramp of exponential growth.